Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Bear with me. I'm not feeling well today. I don't feel well very often anymore. I want to talk about something that I wrote about many years ago. It's been plagiarized in part by Vladimir Moss, who, when my article on this topic came out, he wrote one of his own a month later, which is common. And it has to do with the Fatima apparitions in the Roman Church relative to Russia. And, of course, Russia is the center of the world in the Catholic, in Catholic life. Because Fatima, of course, is official doctrine. Numerous popes have made it that way, and the popes are the only people who matter. And, but there's a lot of bizarre things about Fatima that few people know about. They're open secrets. And the Fatima apparitions are one of the reasons, one of the many reasons I left the, so-called traditional Church of Rome. The SSPX and other bodies really can't function without a papacy. The entire Roman Catholic idea centers around the papacy. Without it, there is no Catholicism. So it puts Catholics today in a very uncomfortable position with the clown they have pretending to be Christian at, in Rome now. And of course, you know, a set of economists have no, they simply have no canonical, right to do what they do because they imply a conciliar attitude that they get to judge, the Pope. Based on doctrinal errors. Trying to have it both ways is very common amongst these people. But around 2006, I wrote a series of articles on Fatima. And Fatima is the absolute essential event of the so-called traditionalist Roman Catholics. And Russia, of course, is at the center. Now, private devotions are at the center of so-called traditionalist Catholicism. But they've been at the center of controversies in the past, like the early Middle Ages, the vision of St. Adamnan, or St. Macarius of Egypt. And to some extent, they've helped define certain notions of the Christian life, especially life after death. And those two, by the way, are from the early Middle Ages and they are even the late classical era. And they concern life after death and make no mention of purgatory or toll houses or anything like that. But that's a separate issue. But in the 20th century, apparitions of what they call Mary, were very common, even up until this day, in Western Europe, with detailed instructions, with a lot of political and social content that you've never seen in any previous private revelations, East or West. A lot of Roman Catholics are very ignorant of pre-Renaissance church history. They really don't know what the ancients thought of such revelations. But the earlier private revelations are very, very different from what you see at Fatima and elsewhere. And it always struck me, there's no traditionalist Roman Catholic that doesn't make Fatima the center of their life. And it is official Catholic doctrine. But I want to ask, why is there no private revelations warning about the Arian crisis, or the Monophysites, or the split between the East and the West, or the Avignon Papacy, or King Henry VIII, or the destruction of Poland, the French Revolution, the persecution of the Catholic Church in Spain, or hundreds of other bad times for the Western Church? Why only now? Why only recent times? And the use of private revelations for Roman Catholics, especially since Vatican II, offers some self-styled traditionalists a convenient battering ram against the modernist mentality that dominates Rome. And it also provides a platform for self-styled Mariologists to preach to the world and that they can claim, even indirectly, special revelations that Pope, the Pope or the bishops don't have access to. Fatima and Lourdes have provided a ready means for certain Catholics to challenge the modernist hierarchy in Rome and to provide an independent basis for operations against a modernist hierarchy. But again, these private revelations are very, very different in the 20th century than they've been in times past. Now, the fathers of the ancient church warned endlessly against private revelations. With very few exceptions, these visions were considered delusions of the devil to trick the elect. Now, I mentioned two exceptions, Mecadius of Egypt and Adobnon of Ireland, but there was never any approval, papal approval, or approval of any bishop of any kind. They just became part of the deposit of faith, because many accepted these over time. The hierarchy didn't have the power it had later on. There was no formal approval of anything like that. The concept was foreign at the time. But you have Roman Catholics very desperate today, and these warnings have been heedlessly discarded. Here's this one thing from the life of St. Anthony of the Desert. And this is from St. Athanasius' biography. Some brothers came to find Abbot Anthony to tell him about a vision that they saw, and to find out from him if it was true or if it came from the demons. They had a donkey that died on the way to him. When they reached the place where the old man was, he said to them before they could say anything, "How is it that little donkey died on the way here?" They said, "Well, how do you know about that, Father?" And he said, "Well, the demons showed me what happened." So they said, "Well, that's exactly what we came here to question you about, for fear that we were being deceived. For we have visions which often turn out to be true." Thus the old man convinced them, by example of the donkey, that their visions in fact came from demons. See, the normal course of events, the ancients were convinced that scriptures, which of course refer to tradition, the writings of the saints, not just the Bible, and the fathers were sufficient for everyone. And because there's a strong possibility that visions are from the evil one, private visions were usually a priori rejected as both dangerous and unnecessary. And this very famous passage I just cited from St. Anthony makes mention of the fact that a vision can be true, but still from demons. The Lives of the Desert Fathers are loaded with stories of visions brought to holy men from demons. In all cases, there's a few similarities. First, it is a manifest ascetic life of the man in question that permits him to see the deceit of the evil one. In other words, only experienced ascetics can see it. Second, demons always clothe themselves in the most pious manner possible, making it almost impossible to tell truth from falsehood. Only the holiness of the person in question can make that distinction possible. Visions granted to children, as in the case of Fatima, who are very inexperienced in the ascetic life, could never be trusted. Even if the most pious visions from very holy men are to be rejected a priori. But Fatima is something that has bothered me my entire life. The apparitions occurred just prior to the end of World War I, but they continued many years afterwards. And of course, they center around Russia. And that Russia be consecrated. That word is very, very vague. To a devotion called the Immaculate Heart of Mary. Now, the Immaculate Heart, in terms of doctrinal history, is very curious. There's not a clear definition of what a heart is. It's not the soul. It's not an essence. It's not the organ itself. But in a very vague way, it's really the devotion upon the virtues and love that Mary has towards her son. But that's the root of all devotion to the Mother of God anyway, so it's a very superfluous concept. The Immaculate Heart, so-called, goes back to John Eudes, saint in the Roman Church, who wrote the office for this devotion and was rejected by Rome during his own lifetime. And yet again, in 1729, the devotion was rejected under different circumstances. Only after the French Revolution, the desperation of Pius VI, suddenly it became accepted in his battle against Napoleon. So it has a very strange doctrinal history, and it's been tolerated, although only recently, receiving any kind of public approbation. And of course, has no history amongst Orthodox people. All devotion to the Mother of God is quite simple. It revolves around her maternal care of Jesus, that it was her flesh that clothes divinity, and that he lived under her obedience for 30 of his 33 years. There's never been any specific devotion to a heart, however that's defined. So it's a very odd devotion to make the center point of the Catholics' approach to Russia. Father Nicholas Gruner died, I think it was 2011. I've spoken to him before. He was a traditional Roman Catholic. Some loved him, some hated him. Some believed that he was a monomaniac. Some believed he was very pious. And he made Fatima the essence of his whole being. Father Gruner, the prophet of this, says this. He says, Fatima, July 13th, 1917, Our Lady told Sister Lucy that God is about to punish the world for its crimes by means of war, famine, and persecution to the Church and of the Holy Father. To prevent this, I shall come to ask for the communions of reparation and for the consecration of Russia to my Immaculate Heart. In the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. The Holy Father will consecrate Russia to me, which will be converted, and a period of peace will be granted to the world. Our Lady's request is very simple. Russia, the font of so much evil in the 20th century, must be set apart and made sacred by its consecration to the Mother of God. Now, several things could be mentioned here. Russia, up until, of course, the Bolshevik Revolution, has always been devoted to the Mother of God, but certainly not to this particular devotion. At the time when this happened, Russia was bleeding white, as was Germany, France, and Austria, during the First World War. It would make some sense that Russia would become the center of the world, but there are many ways to interpret this, since the USSR, not Russia, will become the center of global violence and unrest. Notice that this says nothing about the destruction of the Austrian Empire, which is a Catholic stronghold in Central and Eastern Europe. To say the least, that's a curious omission. The Austrians have tried to forcibly convert the Serbs in the Ukraine, who spilt so much blood and treasure trying to defend Russia's border against Turkey. And it might be noted, too, that the only reason the Austrian Empire even existed to fight in World War I was that Tsar Nicholas I intervened after the revolutions of 1848 to reinstall the emperor. It's a very stupid comment for him to say that Russia is the font of so much evil. I don't know what he's referring to there. Fatima people are very vague. Marxism, of course, came from Germany, came from the Jews, came from the revolutionary movement in France, and came from the European Enlightenment. Russia had absolutely nothing to do with it except in terms of fighting it. The best philosophical attacks on the Enlightenment came from Russia, of which Father Gruner knew nothing. So Father Gruner says, he continues this way. At Fatima, Our Lady warned that if the consecration was not done, as she requested, then Russia will spread its errors throughout the world, raising up wars and persecutions against the Church. The good will be martyred, the Holy Father will have much to suffer, and various nations will be annihilated. And by the same token, the miraculous conversion of Russia after its consecration by the Pope and the bishops, and the resulting peace in the world will be a sign of the power of God's grace acting through ministers of His Church and the intercession of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. This is a bizarre millennialist cult. This has nothing to do with Christianity, let alone Roman Catholicism. Sure, the popes have had much to suffer, but it's through their own making. No one has forced this on them. And as always, it's very vague. They never say what consecration means. I can only assume that they mean the conversion to Roman Catholicism, although not the post-Vatican II version. I don't know what version they're referring to. But in 1917, of course, Russia was still officially an Orthodox country. But it might be asked why the invasion of Russia by Poland during the time of troubles didn't succeed. They even had a Roman Catholic monarch in Russia, in Moscow. And there was no private revelation concerning that. Where Austria's forced conversion to the Serbs, which failed. With the Crusaders in 1204. With the Teutonic, Livonian Knights. Every attempt to forcibly convert Orthodox people has failed miserably. Thus, without this act of consecration, there'll be no conversion of Russia. And without this conversion, Russia's errors will continue to infest the world, persecuting the Church. Now, the concept of Russia spreading her errors was spoken in 1929. So the dates are a little mixed up. Now, this is odd, because Russia was known as the USSR at the time. I'm not sure why they didn't refer to the Soviet Union. Russia was merely an administrative unit and as much under attack as anybody else. Was it Marxism? Was it Orthodoxy? What was it? Marxism certainly wasn't Russian by any means. The USSR was officially atheist at the time, and the Orthodox Church was in exile in Yugoslavia. And of course, no nations were annihilated in any normal sense of the term. But Russia as a cultural entity certainly was not involved. So in 1929, Russia certainly wasn't a country. As a cultural entity, it was under attack and victim of Soviet genocide. And there's no interest in this fact, in these apparitions, or ignorance completely, in these apparitions. As a province of the USSR, she was a defined territory. But as a people, she was spread throughout the world. In consecrating the world in general on that date without mentioning Russia, the public knowledge of the presence of tens of thousands of witnesses, both during and after the ceremony, and the people of Russia are still awaiting our consecration and confiding. And I don't know what to make of this. Of course, there's never been any desire for this in Russia. But the question is, of course, what does Russia owe to the Church of Rome? The Church of Rome has no traditional presence in Russia. When she does exist there, it's as a hostile force. It's an agent either of the Polish or the Austrian crown. Orthodoxy was publicly persecuted in Catholic Poland and Austria, as well as Lithuania. Even in places like Spain to this day, public proselytization is forbidden. So I'm not entirely sure, I'm not entirely sure what Gruner is saying here. It's all very vague and based on a tremendous amount of ignorance. The problem with the Fatima apparitions is that because they occurred in this period of time just after, 1917, 1929, they clearly were written by someone else. This isn't Mary speaking here. There's too many errors of fact and interpretation that don't make any sense. And they certainly would never be confided to very inexperienced teenagers at the time. But of course, what the Fatima people have had to do was rewrite history. The fall of Marxism wasn't predicted, so they had to say that it never fell. Problem is that the complete destruction of Catholic culture throughout Western Europe was not done by force. It was done quite voluntarily. At least the Russians have an excuse. Westerners do not. Nicholas Gruner even used to say that abortion was invented in Russia, he says, where legalized abortion began. Of course, abortion was practiced in ancient Greece and Rome and raised to a level of a sacrament in the West. The Roman Empire and even the Spartans made infanticide obligatory for deformed children, as in most pagan civilizations in antiquity. Now, if he's referring to Stalin in this case, he wasn't Russian. Russia wasn't relevant at the time. And Stalin banned abortion in Russia. The law was June 27, 1936, a 2-year prison term for procuring or performing an abortion, which apparently he didn't know. But the strangest thing here, and the most bizarre aspect of the Fatima devotion, is its millennial utopianism. Now, this is open. They're not hiding this, but Catholics will not talk about it. Once this penetrated my mind, I had to leave the Church of Rome. It's not just that Russia can convert to a religion that's been manifestly hostile to her for 700 years, but that this conversion, the overriding of free will, because it would be done by some kind of force, will bring lasting world peace and the end of history. This consecration will completely override everyone's free will, and utopia will be realized. Now, this is what the Fatima Network says here. When the consecration of Russia is done, the proper relationship between ecclesiastical and civil authority will be realized. There will be no clash between the Church's teachings and the laws or governance of any country. For example, the triumph of the Immaculate Heart, no government will have legalized abortion or contraception or anything. The laws of God will guide the laws of all states. The peace of Our Lady, as indicated by Isaiah, that he's referring to the Apocalypse of Isaiah, also includes the conversion of the world to Catholicism. This is the clear meaning of the first part of the passage, which states that nations will flock to the house of the Lord. It's been infallibly defined three times that there is no salvation outside the Church of Rome. Therefore, it follows God wants all men to be Catholic. The peace Our Lady promised is the peace that Isaiah prophesies in sacred scripture. The house of the Lord will be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Many people shall go. Come, let us go to the mountain of the Lord, and the house of the God of Jacob will teach us his ways, and walk in, etc., etc. This was prophesied over 2,500 years ago, and will only be brought to fruition when the Immaculate Heart triumphs and reigns. It took me a long time for that to penetrate. All of the earlier patristic analyses of Isaiah are false, according to him. Only Fatima is able to properly define it. Utopia will be brought to earth once Russia is somehow consecrated by the Pope of Rome. It is a millennial sect. It's a cult. The Book of Revelations is thrown out the window. If somehow the Pope miraculously converts the entire nation of Russia to Catholicism, because it wouldn't just be Russia, it would be the entire planet, without any explanation as to how that would be. And this is stated again in Ubi Urcano de Concilio of Pius XI, who says explicitly that utopia will be brought to earth at this point concerning the consecration of Russia. So this is the official papal ideology. So Rome has fallen into the very bizarre version of millennialism. Utopia will be realized and free will be overridden. The Church of Rome will reign supreme everywhere. All institutions of the world will give way to the Roman papacy. Sin will disappear. Injustice will disappear. There'll be no more sickness. There'll be no more suffering. Russia alone stands in the way. When at any time did the Church of Rome ever accept this bizarre theory? The end times will be no more. Once a consecration is established, there's nothing left. Fatima is the only proper interpretation of scripture, according to Nicholas Gruen and most of the followers of this bizarre sect. It will wipe out suffering. It's even better than the Protestant rapture. And worse than this, if it isn't done, Mary, Christ is almost never mentioned, Mary will wipe out 9/10 of the human race. So the Immaculate Heart holds the world hostage here. We don't know, they say, which nations will be annihilated from the face of the earth. Now, this was initially said in the 20s. Our own nation could be one of them. Nuclear weapons exist everywhere. Russia and Communist China are allies. Both regard the U.S. as their enemy. With other nuclear warheads, they could be aimed and sent to this country in a couple of minutes. In other words, nuclear war will come to the U.S. if Russia isn't converted to Catholicism. It's really hard to even debate this. And this is a purely private revelation, which then has changed many times, and of course has to be interpreted and reinterpreted by people like Nicholas Gruner. Regardless, Russia is the main threat to world peace. They claim that the annihilation of nations will occur under Marxism, but since that didn't happen, they have to say, well, nuclear weapons still exist, so it'll happen then. So they have to claim that no, the Soviet Union never fell, that Russia is still Marxist, everything, this is all a big act. And they know that because Fatima tells them that. But of course, what we know is that it's the United States that needs consecration. Russia is more Christian, more stable, better off in almost every way than even the best of the United States. And the bizarre thing here is that free will is totally denied. All this will happen by force. Of course, it's all based on circular reasoning. You have to accept their interpretation of the kids' interpretation of Fatima for any of it to make any sense. Fatima alone defines not just the New Testament, but the Old Testament. And even weirder, the Pope can't do this by himself. He has to do it in concert with the world's bishops. Now, this doesn't make any sense, because that suggests conciliarism, which usually the papal ideologues of the Fatima movement strongly condemn. So even if one bishop is absent, the power of the Pope to force Mary's hand will fail, and she'll permit, eventually, I guess, the destruction of almost all of humanity. No one's sure what's been the delay from 1929 to now, but this is bizarre. This is also official Catholic doctrine. This is not, I mean, this is right in Pius XI's work. And as well as Pope John Paul II. So what these guys have had to do is claim that Russia is no different than the Soviet Union today. And everything that's happened in the 90s as well as since 2000 is an act. Now, when you go through the Fatima Network's articles on Russia, they're very outdated. It's like Nixon wrote them. You know, they're using references that made sense in the 60s, maybe. But because the Fatima apparitions never predicted the fall of Marxism, they have to deny it ever happened. Everything has to be crammed into the Fatima mentality. And so they sound foolish. The fall of Marxism in Russia was a ploy to get Western aid. They dismantled 7/8 of their economy to get Western assistance, with, of course, no strings attached for some reason. One of the worst, most ignorant people in this movement, a guy named Christopher Ferrara, who I've made fun of many, many times in the past for his ignorance, he claims that all of his information comes from the Washington Post. And I've followed his career, maybe not recently. And, of course, he claims that Yeltsin is a communist. He apparently has known nothing that went on in the 1990s in Russia. And the proof there is, of course, that Putin's renationalizing major industries. And, of course, the connection with Red China. And the proof of this is that the Orthodox Church has repressed any expression of the Catholic Church, which he says is forbidden to have a permanent resident priest or bishop in the country. It's a bizarre statement, of course, which he takes from the Washington Post without thinking about it. He refers to the FSB as the FSG. I'm pretty sure he means the FSB. And of course, I've written him before. He's saying the same thing every year, every conference. They have the conferences all the time. He says the same thing over and over again. I covered their conference in 2006 and never had to do it again because it's the exact same thing over and over again. I've asked them these questions all the time with no answer, of course. And so many times I've said, you know, it's popularity. Putin's popularity is about 80% with a tremendous public-private fusion-style economy growing. It's not centrally planned. How do you explain that? And of course, he doesn't know what central planning is. So you're dealing with Fatima Crusader people who are very good on stuff like the Jews, and of course, they claim that Russia it created Marxism, although they say that Marxism was financed by the Western billionaires. And they don't see the problem with that. And it's very strange because they're well aware that if anybody needs consecration, it's the West. And of course, I was traditional Roman Catholic for a long time. I was SSPX for years. I know the agenda of the Fatima movement. I know that Russia is the center of everything they talk about. And so I'm in a particularly good place to talk about this. Conference I covered in 2006, of course, I was long Orthodox by that point. You had 30 bishops there, many priests. So this isn't a fringe movement by any means. John Paul II dedicated his whole papacy to it. These conferences occur, they condemn the new mass. So I'm not really sure what kind of Catholicism Russia is to be converted to. Not the current kind. They attack the UN. You know, it's like, you know, it's again, this is Nixonian stuff. They're usually very older guys. Really outdated concepts. Because Fatima didn't predict anything that's happened over the last 20 years. So they don't know what to do. So they deny it. But remember, this is official. This isn't some sect. This is official doctrine. Nicholas Gruner is a decent man. He's well-spoken. He's very intelligent. But he was in the unfortunate position of having to force everything into the Fatima mold. there was no point of church fathers or canons when you have Fatima. These private revelations interpret everything, as he did with Isaiah and many other places. And they say a lot of good things, you know, the false promises of the UN and Rockefeller Foundations. I mean, older stuff, stuff that we all know. But in the last 15 years, they haven't said a new thing at any of these conferences. It's the same people, the same issues, and nothing gets done. But most Orthodox people have no idea what Fatima actually is. The notion that the world is being held hostage here, that the conciliar council of bishops, which is a bizarre concept that these people actually condemn, conciliarism is something they condemn, so I don't know how this even got here. There's so many layers of contradiction, I can't make sense out of it. The world will be destroyed. It was supposed to happen many years ago. Typically, these millennial cults, like Jehovah's Witnesses, they say the world's going to end tomorrow, then it doesn't happen, then a week later, they keep pushing it back, and they always explain it, and they have no explanation each time. So as the years go by, they have book after book explaining why it didn't happen, and they all sound very foolish. But the worst part of it all is the notion that there is no end times, the book of Revelation is irrelevant, when Russia is consecrated, utopia, heaven will come down to earth, and utopia will reign supreme forever. There'll be no suffering, there'll be, you know, I can't push this hard enough. So in 2006, I attended one of their conferences, and there was a guy, I don't even know if he's still alive, David Allen White. He's an establishmentarian because he was a literature professor at the Naval Academy in Maryland. So I have no respect for him in that respect, but he's an intelligent man. He has a love of literature. He has a tremendous lecturing style. And it's typical for these people, though, he makes the incredibly dumb claim that Dostoevsky predicted the Fatima apparitions. Now, unlike everyone else who presented there, White has a respect for Russia and the literary tradition. He had to kind of dumb everything down for his audience. But he does say that Dostoevsky was a prophet of God. In the same way that certain artists were blessed by God with a prophetic ability. The prophetic insight with this resurgence of Russian greatness after a period of suffering, although this is done under Orthodox auspices, which he left out. Dostoevsky, of course, through numerous characters, predicted the bloodshed, the revolution, the civil war. But a small army of Russian saints said the same thing, as well as a much later restoration. It is significant that Anthony Krapovitsky, who was the founder of the Russian Church in Exile, was a literary critic and Dostoevsky scholar. And Dostoevsky's mind allowed him to have a great insight into the revolution. But like a lot of these guys, White is way out of his element when he deals with Russian literature. You know, Russia is a civilization to herself. She's a combination of European and Asian cultures, which is a great strength of Russia. It's a Eurasian society. The whole European DNA, there's cultural elements from Asia there, or ancient elements that were wiped out during the Enlightenment. I should put it more that way. White is actually a Shakespeare specialist. You know, going from Shakespeare to Marlowe was one thing, but going from Shakespeare to Dostoevsky is something else. And so, like so many guys, he takes assumptions that would make sense in Elizabethan England and imposes them on 19th century Russia. Now, White does say that the errors of Russia is not orthodoxy, but Marxism. Because the Fatima type says that Marxism is a Russian invention. They don't explain how this is. They don't mention who did it. They'll say elsewhere about the Western bankers that created it, and Karl Marx being a Jew and all this. And they're right about that. But somehow that doesn't affect their view that they say that Marxism is Russian. Now, the apparitions of Fatima and other apparitions that came afterwards claim that if the consecration wasn't completed, Russia, and I put that in quotes, will spread her errors throughout the world, causing, you know, chaos and death everywhere. But the apparitions did not specify the nature of these errors. And so post-Fatima writers don't really know what these are, and so they fill in the blanks themselves. the highest level of conceptual confusion came during the you know, an excellent address by Dr. White. And then he did a second one on Solzhenitsyn. And he's struggling to connect Fatima in some weird way to Dostoevsky and Solzhenitsyn. And then he makes the breathtaking claim that Russian errors were collectivism, atheistic materialism, collective behavior, groupthink, etc. Dripping with absurdity. But Russia taught the world how to persecute, is what he said. It's a very, very stupid statement. It would take me so long to unravel stupidity there. I want to reiterate that Russia didn't exist after 1921. Everything Russia was violently suppressed. Russia existed only as a cultural entity in Europe, America, nationalist China, etc. The message of Fatima insists on mentioning something called Russia long after it ceased to exist in any national legal sense. Never referred to the USSR. But I wonder if White actually believes this. I have to explain it to him. Of course, materialism is a creation of the West. Groupthink is a modern liberal capitalist creation, manipulated by a media entertainment conglomerate controlled by a tiny and often anonymous group of Jews. Persecution has existed long as civilization has. Russia's errors, root and branch, were imports. Imports, I might add, the czars of Russia, did all in their power to suppress. But he really means, of course, that these are errors of the Western Enlightenment. They proceed directly from the utterly utopian vision of people like Francis Bacon and Rousseau, Hess, LaSalle, Comte, Saint-Simon, Feuerbach, Darwin, Marx, Nietzsche, just to name a handful. It's utterly irresponsible and dishonest for people like White to even imply that these are remotely Russian in any way. But the USSR, of course, was multinational. It had a ruling caste of Jews. But you had all kinds of Asians other than them. You had Armenians, Caucasians, Balts. After World War II, you had Poles, Germans, Russians, Hungarians, Yugoslavs, Albanians. And hundreds of smaller groups create the so-called workers' paradise. The satellites of the USSR spread to America, especially Harvard University. The Soviet experiment was spread by an army of well-funded university professors. Arthur Daniels Midland had no difficulty rescuing the USSR over and over again with grain shipments. The West, of course, built Soviet industry, which no one mentions. Henry Ford had no difficulty investing millions at the height of the Great Depression in America, helping Russia spread its errors. Ford created the largest Ford plant in the world near Kharkiv in 1936. But in terms of a police state, of course, the first one that really was well-organized was Catholic Venice during the Renaissance. But that's typical of any oligarchy. The police system was created to protect a minuscule group of usurious capitalists who had no right to their property, so they had to lord it over everyone else. But because Venice was so small and wealthy, they had the ability to create a real police state. It was much, much later that other larger societies could do the same. But all this, according to White, is Russian. And all of this because he has to force all this stuff into the framework of the Fatima apparitions from 1917 to 1929. So Catholics who believe this stuff are forced to fit world history into its categories and end up sounding half-witted. And of course, he doesn't bother to mention that Stalin was Georgian, Chernenko was Ukrainian, Brezhnev was Ukrainian, Malenkov was Macedonian, Beria was a Karaite Jew, Sokolnikov was Jewish, Trotsky, of course, was Jewish, Yashnitsky was Polish and Jewish, Shvepov was Turkmen, Gromyko was Belarusian, Lenin was mixed race. This is Russian errors? It comes from Russia, was his refrain, over and over again. And he says this in lecture after lecture, year after year, conference after conference. And he doesn't seem to know that Russian and Soviet are two completely different, in fact, opposing things. How difficult must it be to be Catholic today? That a relatively brilliant man like David White has to go through these mental calisthenics to make sense out of Fatima. that Russia could spread her errors when most of the Soviet leaders weren't Russian. And somehow, connecting this with the prophecies of Dostoevsky and Solzhenitsyn, who of course neither one mentioned Fatima or cared about it, in Solzhenitsyn's case. And both were very strict in their Orthodox observance. Now he does say something, you know, he says that it would be the monastics in Russia who suffered the most. So now suddenly they're okay. It's this class that would be the most willing to maintain the faith in the face of oppression, which is true. Now in a conference like this, this is a powerful insight, and it went over the heads of the audience at the time. So he's praising Orthodox monastics, having no conception that it contradicts everything he said before. I mean, he stated it in such a way to make it anti-Bolshevik. But his meaning is clear. Now, I want to address people like him. I want to address White. I don't even know if White's still alive. But I want to address the Fatima crowd directly here. Dr. White says the Orthodox monastics are the main people to maintain the flame of the Orthodox faith under persecution. And that they show tremendous courage and Christian charity in the highest sense. But what does that say about your own faith? By your own admission, the horrid Novus Ordo was imposed upon Roman Catholicism, who overwhelmingly accepted it without persecution from any government. In other words, Roman Catholic peoples ran to embrace what you rightly call a liturgical abomination without any persecution. No one forced them to do this. Yet in the Orthodox world, they remained faithful to the ancient Eastern rites, even under intense Bolshevik executions and tortures, exile, and death camps. So what does it say about Orthodoxy versus Catholicism? What does it say about the Vatican upon which you place your loyalty? What does this tell you about the Orthodox tradition? It's going to become harder and harder for people like you to remain loyal to the Vatican the deeper you go into people like Dostoevsky or Gogol, or the Orthodox Church in exile on the other hand. Guys like him, if they're honest, their honesty will save them from papism and its errors. But Dr. White's talk on Russian literature is not half bad. I've stressed his errors. And silly ones. You know, Dostoevsky talked about the prediction, predicted a persecution in Russia that was, a lot of people predicted at the time. And then it would, after the revolution, there'd be a certain resurrection of glory. But White seems to say, well, that must be Catholicism then. Because, you know, he knew the consecrations would be performed. Now, I don't think he really believes that. This is a sop to his audience. Dostoevsky, of course, was strictly Orthodox. He only meant an Orthodox resurgence. Russia aimed directly at converting the Vatican rather than the reverse. The Vatican is what needs to be converted to Christianity, not anything in Russia. In fact, many passages in Diary of a Writer, Dostoevsky, say exactly that. White makes a few minor errors. He refers to Gogol as a Russian. He says that Gogol was the primary influence on Dostoevsky, which isn't true. But the conference that I'm talking about here is the same every year. And there's someone else, Peter Chernowski, who's an old friend of mine. When I was in grad school in Nebraska, he was a professor of Thomas philosophy at St. Mary's College in St. Mary's, Kansas, which is about 3 hours south of Lincoln. And I was a SSPX in the mid-90s. I would regularly visit the chapel down there, and Peter and I became friends. He left the college. I lost track of him. I don't know where he is or what he's doing now. But Peter is highly intelligent and a man who I respect. Now, Peter Chernowski deals with Thomistic philosophy exclusively, but he's really talking about diplomatic history in the 19th century. And he spends a lot of time talking about how threatened the Vatican was by Russia, and that the Vatican did all in its power to prop up the Turkish Empire. Or at least barring that, keeping Russia out of the Balkans once Turkey was clearly falling apart, which put them in full union with Britain and France at the time. The Vatican did assist in propping up the Islamic Empire as a means of controlling Orthodoxy. But what's clear between the lines here is that the Fatima message is intimately connected with the Vatican's interest concerning Russia in the late 19th century. Sinowski makes it clear that the Vatican was maneuvering diplomatically throughout the 1800s, the late 1800s, with one end in view, controlling Russia and Orthodoxy. Near the end of the war, when, according to Peter, the Vatican succeeded in getting the British to bar Russia from the Balkans, the Fatima apparitions began almost exactly. The timing was perfect. But to make the connection here is incumbent. Any journalist has to make that connection. Fatima fits perfectly within Vatican diplomatic maneuvering in the Balkans. It was soon rendered moot anyway after 1921, when it was clear that the Whites lost the war. But even still, the Soviet-based church still had designs in the Balkans, and Stalin was essential in creating the Greek Civil War after World War II to expand Soviet influence. Now, Chernovsky makes some astonishing, although basically correct, statements about Vatican policy towards Russia in the 19th century. And it was uniformly hostile. You can't help that. You have two churches claiming apostolic succession from the ancients. Now, today, the Pope of Rome makes no such claim. It's not even a church. There's only one church that claims the ancient apostolic tradition, and that's Orthodoxy. Francis has no claim to that and doesn't care. But Chernovsky does make the false claim, and many of these guys do, that the only reason Russia was hostile was the irrational prejudice on a religious basis. He neglected to mention the centuries of warfare between the Polish Empire and the Russian, the contest between Vienna and Petrograd for influence in the Balkans, and of course, the Vatican's preference for the Islamic Turks over the Orthodox Russians. The Catholics in the Russian Empire were exclusively foreign, and members of ethnic groups, such as Peter's own Poles, overtly hostile to the Russians. That may have some bearing on the hostility of the Russian Empire's hostility towards Catholics. And it mirrored the hostility of the Austrian and older Polish Empire, their hostility to Orthodox people. Especially in the Polish Empire, Orthodox people were barred from citizenship. The uprising of Khmelnytsky in 1648, was precisely the Orthodox Cossack protest against the exploitation of the Orthodox people from the Polish elite and the Jews. Peter once told me in an email that many years ago that he was a supporter of the Habsburg Empire. Vienna was, of course, in many respects, a humane monarchy. Most monarchies are. He neglected to mention that it was Tsar Nicholas I who reinstalled the emperor on his throne after 1848. Then Vienna returned the favor by supporting the Allies against Russia in the Crimean War, against the very same emperor. It bears mentioning that the Vatican made it very clear that the war in the Crimea was a holy war against Orthodoxy. Again, something else that might make Nicholas I a little testy. Chernovsky makes it also clear that Russia wanted Constantinople to create a restored Orthodoxy and an Orthodox Vatican. Now, I've said many times that Catholic people cannot think outside of Catholic categories, but this is an extreme example. Now, I respect Peter Chernovsky very much, but I have to inform him that Orthodoxy has existed for 2,000 years without a Vatican. Orthodoxy has endured centuries of Turkish genocide without a Vatican. She endured Marxist persecution without a Vatican. Catholic genocide in Poland and Croatia without a Vatican. The Patriarch or Emperor in Constantinople was never similar to a Vatican in any way. And in fact, Orthodox people are pretty mystified about the Roman dependence on such an institution. An institution, by the way, that in the last generation has made the life of traditional Catholics miserable. There's nothing to restore. And throughout all of these persecutions, with no Vatican, doctrine hasn't changed at all. We can't say the same about Catholicism. Orthodoxy has always been the same, whether in or out of communion with the Roman See. Orthodoxy has always functioned in the same manner, canonically, liturgically. Has never needed a Vatican to maintain this tradition. Its asceticism, its ancient liturgies, never required a Vatican. Although the Roman Church apparently needs one to violate all of these and to create the Novus Ordo. You'll find a lot of Catholic apologists going to Vladimir Sergeyevich Soloviev. I've spent many years studying Soloviev. Chernovsky misquotes him quite often and falsifies his record in terms of his philosophy. Catholics for years have been searching for a Russian Catholic they could use against Orthodoxy, and they think they found one with Soloviev. Now, Soloviev was a Talmudist and a Talmud scholar, although not a Jew. In a trip to Egypt, Soloviev spoke with a spirit who identified itself with the divine Sophia. And this is from his own diaries. And his philosophical career began with these visions. So I don't think Peter has read anything of Soloviev except the one book on the Russian church. A book, by the way, he later repudiated in his dialogues on Antichrist. So Soloviev is a brilliant man, but it's very, very curious to use him as an authority here. Soloviev's argument, Lectures on Divine Humanity, say that the human evolution is leading to the manifestation of the divine female, with the divine Sophia on earth, under a world theological system located in Moscow, a synthesis of Rome and Constantinople, where Christianity will be united under a new synthesis. Soloviev became Catholic. It was only to bring this about, but it's clear all his biographers say that he received the last rites from an Orthodox priest. And he did abandon a lot of that nonsense speculation later in his life. The global unification of all religions in Moscow after the lectures is gone by the time he writes his Conversations or Dialogues on Antichrist. The purpose of Moscow was to reveal its own destiny in human evolution, not so much by converting to Romanism, but rather to create a global synthesis between the Greek and Latin world. Although he might need to know that both the churches of Rome and Moscow condemned the Sophia theory and the person of Christ, so dear to Soloviev and others. Chernovsky also says that Dostoevsky was a close friend and confidant of Soloviev, which is not true. Dostoevsky did attend the lectures, but that seemed to be the end of their relationship. Soloviev died 20 years after Dostoevsky. But Peter has not read the lectures on divine humanity. Because so many of his views on Russia revolve around Soloviev, he probably behooves him to read this. Peter is a brilliant Thomistic scholar, and I've learned much from him. But yet again, you have someone completely out of their element in dealing with a very, very foreign civilization. At this very same conference, again, it's the same group of people every year. Chris Ferrara is there. He's kind of like comic relief. He starts off by saying that his authority is the Washington Post, which is no way to start off a presentation on a group of people like this. I mean, they all believe that the media is tightly controlled and they know about the Jews and all this stuff. So saying that his authorities are the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal is a lot. But his essential argument, of course, the Pope of Rome always said that the consecration of Russia had been done. Ferrara says, well, no, that can't be because of Putin. Because utopia hasn't come down, heaven hasn't come down to earth, the consecration hasn't been done. And again, I'll repeat how curious it is that you need to have the full College of Bishops to do this. The Church of Rome, especially the Fatima traditionalists, have condemned the idea of conciliarism, which this implies. Bishops in the Roman Church are meaningless. The Pope can dismiss them, remove them. He can do as he pleases. He's not subject to canon law. The Pope's not subject to anything. That's been the problem. That's why I said epicontism doesn't make any sense. The minute someone says they could judge the Pope, they become a conciliarist. But somehow, they've gotten around this notion, well, see, heaven hasn't come down to earth yet, therefore, there's no way that the consecration could have been done, and they figured out, well, it's because not all the bishops of the world were involved. The same Novus Ordo bishops that they hate, by the way. So again, there's layers of contradiction here that I can't make any sense out of. Again, this is not a fringe group. This is mainstream Catholicism. There's no getting out of this. Ferrara essentially repeats John McCain's arguments about, it'd be about the Chinese or about Putin's treatment of Kaczynski, who he apparently supports. You know, again, these are very dated references because these guys are dead now. Nicholas Gruner has passed on. But these conferences go on every year. And the Fatima Crusader is still around. I initially wrote this article in 06, but nothing has changed. Fatima is what happens when you try to simplify a theology, when you try to take the tradition of Catholicism and reduce it to one event, in this case, the apparitions of Fatima. With these people, Nicholas Gruner among them, everything has to be filtered through it. Again, this has been accepted by all the popes. This is not anything new or a fringe movement. This is a papal doctrine. Therefore, it's Catholic. This isn't a matter of Israel. Private revelation now has overthrown patristics and the canons and everything else. When John Paul II dedicated his whole papacy to Fatima after the attempt on his life, which was done on the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima, and he attributed his survival to her. This is official doctrine. And I can't repeat this enough. I mean, I you know, for years, I studied Fatima as a Roman Catholic in college. Read about the fact that heaven's going to come to earth and never questioned it. Few Catholics do. One of the things that actually got me into the Russian question was this Fatima insanity. It's a cultic group in the sense that they take one event, one mystic seer, and they filter all world history, all theology, all tradition through it. So when things don't work out the way that the seer says that they will, they then have to go through a series of mental gymnastics like you wouldn't believe to justify. No nations have been annihilated. Putin is anti-communist. Or anti-Soviet, I should say. As he said many, many times. He's a Eurasianist Orthodox man. That's the foundation of his rule. Russia and China are doing far better than the U.S. The U.S. is in such a morass of destruction for them to look to Russia as a group, this is what needs to be consecrated, is laughable. Especially to that very weird devotion that has absolutely no stock in Russia at all. They make no mention of the unions. They've given up on that method because the unia, as what happened with me, the unia is how Catholics become Orthodox, not the other way around. I was in the Ukrainian church for a long time. That's how I became Orthodox in the first place. So as they see the Western world decaying before their very eyes, they have to figure out a way to blame Russia for this. So the Fatima people were blaming Russia long before Hillary Clinton was. They claim to make sense out of their apparition. Their interpretation of an interpretation of the apparition. I've read the writings of the children, and these apparitions change over time. They never said it was the Mother of God early on. It was just a woman talking to them. And their interpretations changed over time. Once the clergy got involved, it became Mary, but only after a while. It's very suspicious. As I said in the beginning, private revelations have never been the foundation of doctrine, let alone an entire church. And certainly not from children. And then children were taken. You had some bishops that were hostile to it because it took power out of their hands. Other bishops who said this was a key to power, and so they accepted it. And the church was always divided here. These apparitions may be true. Certainly something supernatural is going on. But as I noticed with the miracles concerning St. Anthony, he says the demons came to him and told him the truth about these guys coming to see him. Because Anthony wasn't afraid of demons, realized that they didn't have much power, they watched their mouth around him. He said, just because they told me the truth doesn't mean they're not demons anymore. Something supernatural is going on there, but it certainly isn't something divine. Peter Chernowski, in his analysis, inadvertently makes the point, I don't think he means to, but he makes the point that Fatima is about Roman Catholic interests concerning Russia and the Balkans. A way to challenge Russia, making her the focus of Catholic thinking, other than their own societies, of course, which were already in the process of decay. Fatima initially was not accepted by most people, and it really wasn't until Pope John Paul II that it became, I mean, Pius XI, you know, made it official doctrine, but it didn't nearly have the domination, where you have parishes named after it, and you have all kinds of groups, and, you know, Our Lady of Fatima is the dominant devotion in the Roman, among traditionalists today. Now, those in the Novus Ordo don't make the claims that Nicholas Gruner used to make, but they have a tendency to import whatever they want into their interpretations of what this woman said to the kids. That now becomes the centerpiece of all doctrine. And I submit to you that this is the destruction of Catholicism. That it fell into yet another heresy. That of millennialism. That they have completely nullified canon law and the saints and scriptures, saying that Fatima is the last proper revelation, and it will bring about the end times without any suffering, so long as Russia is somehow isolated, consecrated in a very vague, weird way. That word isn't really said very often amongst any other people. And of course, because it doesn't have the utopian results, they have to say, well, it wasn't done properly. Pope John Paul II said he did it many times. I said, well, it can't be because we don't live in utopia now. But they actually state that heaven will come down to earth once Russia is isolated from the world. When you understand, you know, Catholic diplomacy around the time of the apparitions, it starts making sense. And now the fact that the Church of Rome is so deep into the New World Order, at least since Vatican II, they have now an extra. This is the one traditional devotion that is actually still powerful among the Novus Ordo because it's anti-Russian. Suddenly, Catholics become, you know, traditionalists when they start talking about Russia. I think you're talking to Pius X. That's the one thing that they don't moderate their opinions on, and it comes from the Fatima ideology. And it has become an ideology. Nicholas Gruner was always a very gentle and good man, but he was very badly misled. Peter Chernowsky was a brilliant philosopher. He is a brilliant philosopher. But because they have to force everything that happens through the structure of the Fatima apparitions, the appearance of this woman to the children in 1917, and then many times thereafter, they end up sounding foolish. And when things don't happen the way that the predictions predicted, they now have to explain it and then explain the explanations. And so you get the ridiculous errors and ignorance. And the Cold War rhetoric from the 50s that still litters the pages of the Fatima Crusader and other journals like that. This is one of the things that got me, that removed me from the Roman Church. One of the things that got me interested in Russia, because why is she always the center of the world? Every ideology makes Russia the center of the world. Liberalism now, certainly. Thanks to me, nationalism. Now Catholicism. Protestantism has been trying to penetrate Russia for a long time. Of course, capitalists hate it. Jews hate it. It's the center of the world for everybody. I'm telling you, it is a sacred place. But to think that it needs to be consecrated by the corrupt Church of Rome is laughable. The Church of Rome needs to be consecrated by Russia. Anyway, thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalists with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.